Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate the invitation to participate in this conference. Especially, I appreciate the opportunity to get down to San Antonio. Now, some of you probably feel that it's chilly outside, but I tell you, from somebody from South Dakota that's been facing minus 40 wind chills off and on this winter, this just feels great to my body down here. So thanks, Kevin, and I appreciate the invitation. What I'd like to do, I guess before we get into this topic of fertilizer decisions in 2009, is just say a word about the organization that I represent here, that I'm representing here, the International Plant Nutrition Institute. It's a fairly new organization, started actually just in January of 2007, and as Kevin indicated, its parent was the Potash and Phosphate Institute, which some of you are probably more familiar with. The mission of the new organization is to develop and promote scientific information about the responsible management of plant nutrition for the benefit of the human family. It's a global mandate that we have, and most of our expenses are covered through a tonnage assessment of dues from the fertilizer manufacturers of the world. You see 17 member companies listed on this slide, and we also work closely with our affiliate members that are over on the far right side. And of course, our programs are primarily cooperative efforts between the research and extension organizations of whatever part of the world we happen to be working in. We're a small organization considering our global mandate. We have 26 or 27 scientists working within their regions around the world. The three staff that are most relevant, I expect, to this audience would be the three across our cotton belt that include Rob Mickelson from the West, Mike Stewart, who's in the front row here, that from San Antonio, that I'm sure you're familiar with, and then Steve Phillips, our most recent addition, who replaced Cliff Snyder, who had been serving in the Mid-South for quite some time, and is now our nitrogen program director, who no longer spends as much time in the southern U.S. Okay, then on to fertilizer decisions for 2009. I think it's important that we stop for a minute and look at the context that we're in relative to decision making. And I suppose the first thing that comes to anyone's mind is what Kevin has already mentioned, and that is the market conditions, particularly the volatility. And then along with that volatility, the generally higher input prices that we've seen developed especially in 2008. We'll get more into that later. The financial crisis and what that means to the future relative to credit, the demand for food and fiber products that are produced, a great deal of uncertainty there when we look at what impact that's going to have in the midterm and short term on agriculture and indeed on decision making on nutrient management. Climate change. There have been some very interesting reviews done recently on the impact of changing precipitation patterns and temperature patterns on the demand of crops for nutrients, as well as the soil's ability to supply nutrients to the crop. And so that's another dynamic aspect that we're dealing with. Our future, from a climate perspective, may not be the same as our past. Genetic changes. Due to developments in biotechnology and also conventional breeding, we continue to see across a diverse set of crops rather dramatic changes in the genetics of the crops and the phenotypes that result from those genetic changes in the field. There's a lot going on in Washington, D.C. these days. And along with those changes comes some anticipated intensification of environmental policies that include reducing hypoxia in the Gulf, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, carbon sequestration in soils. We'll probably get into that a little bit later in this session. Reducing ammonia emissions, reducing impacts on biodiversity reduction, eutrophication, et cetera, et cetera. And so these kinds of concerns will likely have a greater impact on how we manage nutrients in the next several years. And then advances in adoption of sensing and application technology, enhanced efficiency fertilizers, a number of developments that have actually moved to the farm and to mainstream agriculture to a greater extent over the last year or two. Now, when we look at those collectively, a term that I heard Dan Freeberg, who is a crop consultant in the Midwest, use that I thought was really very appropriate, was an agronomic perfect storm. We have a lot of things coming together that can potentially impact the decision-making process that we make relative to nutrient use and other things. What are the implications? Well, one is that fertilizer has been getting a lot more attention. And not just in audiences and groups like this, but if you look back over the last year, what you see is that the general media is picking up stories and developing stories on fertilizer to a much greater extent than we have in the past. Some of that has been good because it has connected fertilizer and food production in a more direct way than has perhaps been done for a number of years, at least back since the early 1970s. But then a quote that comes to mind is from J. Paul Getty. And it goes, "In times of rapid change, experience could be your worst enemy." Now, to those of us that are a bit gray in the beard, so to speak, that can be a bit threatening. Because if there's one thing that we bring is some experience. But I think that the point that this quote leads us to is that future management decisions may need to be more measurement-based than historical. In other words, we may really need to stop and think about how we have been always doing things in the past and ask ourselves the question whether those same practices are still appropriate for the future. Past performance in a region for a practice may not necessarily reflect future performance. Your future, in fact, may be more like someone else's past than your own past due to changes in genetics, due to changes in climate, economics, maybe even objectives that we have in growing the crop or operating the cropping system that's before us that we're trying to accomplish. Okay, back to volatility in market conditions. I think most of us are probably quite aware of this these price trends, especially the ones that have occurred over the last year. Absolutely amazing changes in fertilizer prices, things we've never seen before, perhaps more so with phosphorus, but also very dramatic changes in nitrogen and potassium. Now, I need to point out that this graph is based on data from USDA, and it just goes through April of 2008. We'll update it here in just a little bit. In fact, we'll update it right here. Now, for many products, about as fast as prices climbed, we saw declines, at least at the wholesale level. Here, you're looking at natural gas, sulfur, urea, DAP. Wow, what incredible volatility. And part of this, of course, was caused by the financial crisis. It came in and just changed everything in a way that not many people, in fact, I don't know that anybody really, really predicted. So we've got this incredible volatility before us, not just in inputs, but also in the value of the crops that we're producing. We see it for corn, we see it for soybeans, we're seeing it for wheat. Here we're looking at cotton prices. Clearly in the last few years, you've experienced greater volatility in cotton prices than has been traditional. And again, I need to point out that last point is from April of 2008, so things have changed quite a bit. And so when we have this situation where you have fertilizer prices changing and crop prices changing, what we typically go towards is a ratio expression rather than actual prices, where instead of talking about fertilizer as dollars per pound of nutrient, we look at fertilizer as pounds of cotton or commodity grown that it takes to pay for a pound of fertilizer. And because part of that is because an economist will tell us if that price ratio stays the same, then your optimum point on a response curve also stays the same. So if you've got 40 cent cotton and 30 cent N, the ratio is 0.75. If that changes to 80 cent cotton and 60 cent N, the ratio is still 0.75, and the economic optimum nitrogen rate doesn't move. It stays at the same level. So this ratio, considering that often we see some tracking of crop prices and fertilizer prices, this helps us a fair bit in trying to make intelligent decisions, not emotional decisions, about fertilizer use. Now here what I've done because of that is developed a chart that looks at cotton to fertilizer price ratios over time. And if this concept has validity, what it should be doing, of course, is buffering the system some. It should be giving us a bit more of a horizontal line over time, and indeed, that's what was happening up until we got into this decade. And now you can see that even in terms of cotton commodity, looking at cotton as the currency, of course, prices have been climbing. A considerable amount of volatility still showing there, but not quite as much as we see if we look at fertilizer as dollars per pound. Now, this chart ends in April of 2008. And of course, as far as market conditions are concerned, April was an eternity ago. Think of all the changes that have taken place since April of 2008. And so, as I was, in fact, cotton was 85 cents a pound, approximately, back in April. It's clearly not that anymore. And so, I really struggled with knowing what to do in updating this chart, recognizing that it ends at a point that is not terribly relevant to us today. And I really did not know what to assume for nutrient prices today, because they are just as variable as you can imagine from area to area. You know, we've got a plugged pipeline right now with wholesale prices a whole lot different than retail prices, and you've got all kinds of problems that have been caused by that. And so what I ended up doing was simply saying, all right, let's look at 50 cent cotton. And then let's look at what price ratios result if we vary nutrient costs from 30 cents on the left over to 75 cents on the right. I would think that would cover pretty much the range that most anybody would be encountering today. And so what this chart would tell us, what this table would tell us, is that if nitrogen or phosphorus or potash cost per pound of nutrient, if they were 50 cents per pound of nutrient, our price ratio would be 1, and we're right up at the top of this chart. That's where this chart ends, and that gets us beyond any historical value we've ever had. And so if we go then from this chart to some response data coming up, try to keep in mind that 0.6 to 1.5 ratio, and looking at 0.6, that would be, I don't have a mouse up here, a pointer. Well, if you look at in the last decade, you'll notice the 0.6 is sort of towards the lower end of the plight of the price fluctuations that we've experienced there. And so then let's go ahead to a couple of examples from research data. And I've taken two examples here that are quite different. One is from Alabama on a Decatur silty clay loam rain-fed cotton from the Tennessee Valley Experiment Station. Another one from Sharkey clay in Arkansas, irrigated cotton. So we've got some large differences here to show an extreme. And then in the table, we look at price ratios and their influence on optimum and rate for those two rather diverse sites. And as you can see, you go from, with a low price ratio, low in today's terms, you end up with an optimum rate there of 88, and this is averaged across several years, down to 72, where we get to a point where we're clear off that previous chart, never before seen ratio. Site 2, similar numbers, 158 down to 143. And so what the major point I wanted to make here is that the differences you'll notice between those two sites was really much greater than the effect of market conditions. And so what's most important is that we know whether we're on a site one or a site two. That's the essence. And that takes us to site-specific approaches to efficient fertilizer management, what you might call the 4R strategy. Application of the right source at the right rate, time, and place for the crop, for the field or the field zone, and of course, for the nutrient. And so investing in determination of right source, rate, time, and place for inputs helps us manage the much higher risk of today's very volatile markets, and the technology you see there becomes a lot more important to us. Essentially, there's greater economic justification for precision input application, enhanced efficiency products, guidance systems, soil testing, plant analysis, soil and crop imaging and sensing, on-farm strip tiles, omission plots, ramps and stamps, if you will, other forms of decision support. Basically, the nutrient management practices that you're discussing at this conference. So if you think about what you're doing to prepare yourself for 2009, being here is one of the right decisions you've made. And listening, learning about new technologies, different approaches, making sure you're up to date and current with the science behind input decisions. Very, very critical. Then if we're in the situation where we're trying to decide how we allocate our fertilizer resources across either nutrients or crops, soil nutrient supply becomes absolutely critical. There's a huge difference if we have a low nutrient supply or a high nutrient supply. And so if we're at a low nutrient supply, and now we're looking in the right graph there, the insert, at fertilizer additions, not soil nutrient supply, what you see is a very steep response curve. And you'll notice that blue zone, market conditions don't influence optimum rates very much under that scenario. If we're in a medium situation where we're getting a lot of nutrient being supplied from the soil, there is where market conditions actually end up influencing optimum rate a lot more. That's where we need to maybe think about adjusting things. And then, of course, if we're at a high soil nutrient supply situation, we don't expect any response to the nutrient added, and there the only reason one would apply the nutrient is to maintain soil fertility in a non-limiting level. And of course, one of the advantages in that approach is that you have flexibility. When fertilizer prices are low, you invest, and when they're not favorable to you, you don't. That also then brings us to look at soil fertility levels across the South. And here we're looking at phosphorus, and the numbers you see in this map are the percent of soil samples requiring annual P or K fertilization to avoid profit loss in most major crops back in 2005. And so you'll see some pretty large numbers here for phosphorus, 75% for Texas. And across the Corn Belt, you see it looks like phosphorus remains a pretty important nutrient to manage. If we look at potassium, the numbers are also significant. Texas here, of course, we expect to see less K response, less frequency of K responses than we would of P, but if you look across the South, you see P and K are both important nutrients. I think in the interest of time, I'm just gonna skip over those additional trends over time. We can get into that later if you'd like. But the story here is that balanced fertility is still among the most important factors affecting fertilizer effectiveness and the performance of other inputs. And what all that means is you look at what the crop needs and make sure that you address all of those needs. Guidance for nutrient allocation when supplies or capital is limited. Allocate much of the nutrients to more responsive areas. Examples of responsive areas would be low testing areas for P and K, for nitrogen, low organic matter soils. So those situations where you expect a large response to N, don't short those areas. Apply some of the nutrients to less responsive areas as well, and the reason why we say that is because most of the response occurs with the first few units of the nutrient, so you don't want to miss out on those kinds of responses. Reductions are economically justified with high price ratios when you've got that sort of a situation before you. And then thirdly, try to apply at least some of all nutrients that are in short supply in the soil to make use of positive interactive effects that can be very useful to us. I wanted to point you to our website, www.ipni.net. If you go, this is our homepage. If you go to the site index, you get a table of contents that has some information that will take you more deeply into some of these topics. One is our past issues of Better Crops. There was a special issue done in the third one in 2008 that focuses on fertilizer economics. There's one article in there just on cotton and a number of articles that also might be of use to you. So if you have interest in to get into this in a bit greater depth, I'd encourage you to take a look at that issue. Also coming soon will be a fertilizer BMPs for cotton in the Mid-South. that is a slide set, so this is probably most useful to those of you that are trainers. It's not just a slide set, though. It has a detailed set of speaker notes for each visual, including original references to take you to, and associated with that is an article that will include a checklist for fertilizer BMPs where you can go in and evaluate just how good a job you're doing and following best management practices. We're doing on time, Kevin. So in that checklist, what kinds of things do we have? Well, they're really going to be organized around the four rights. And so when we look at right rate, the price ratio comes out as being an important concept to keep in mind. But it is one of many factors that influence rate. Assessing soil nutrient supply, assessing plant demand, accounting for all nutrient sources, considering nutrient removal budgets, impact on the soil resource, and of course that gets us into future costs. And it might be a time where you delay some of those payments into the future. That is the kinds of thing we've been talking about earlier. And then, of course, providing a balanced fertility approach. Right time and source, basically improving synchrony between supply and demand. The role of enhanced efficiency fertilizers, we'll hear more about that later. That can be significant in some cases. And then right place, where we look at fertilizer placement, we look at limiting off-field transport by limiting where we apply fertilizers in a particular field. So I guess in general then, to kind of look over the topics we've been talking about, three things I'd like to emphasize. First of all, in general, don't be general. Be as site-specific and analytical as you can when making decisions with a focus on efficiency. Consider the new technologies, new concepts, updating of old technologies, updating of calibration information, those kinds of topics that you're going to be hearing about here this week. Base decisions on measurements whenever possible. I think that's very important. Measure as much as you can. Be cautious about always doing things the way you've done them. And then thirdly, remember that BMPs ensuring right source, rate, time, and place, we think offers a means of managing risk and improving efficiency and returns, and is something to really keep in mind as we look to fertilizer decisions in 2009. So some very general observations. I hope some of them have been useful to you. And Kevin, I thank you for the time on the program today, and to you for your attention.
We have a time for a question or two. Does anybody have a question for Dr. Fix?
Great question. www.ipni.net. IPNI.net. Anything else? Yes, Wayne.
Hi, Paul. Mike Foley. What's your projection for fertilizer prices in 2009?
I wish I would have bet somebody that question would come up. I know a little bit about. Yeah, well, unfortunately, you're going to have to ask somebody else. That we get asked that all the time, and the only thing we can do as an organization that has in our membership pretty much all the manufacturers of the world, we can't make future projections legally because then it looks like we're trying to set prices. And so what I got as close as I thought I could to that topic, and we can talk about factors influencing fertilizer prices, and I think you're mostly probably all aware of those already. The guts of the matter right now in the short term is that we have a plugged pipeline. That spike in prices caused all kinds of problems, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And so you've got your fertilizer dealers out there that, you know, some of whom were very concerned about making sure they can supply product to their customers when they need it, and they bought even though they knew prices really stunk. And now we've got the problem of the high-priced product sitting in a bin, and the wholesale price is now having really come down a lot. And that has plugged things up all over the place. And so we've got some hard times going on out in the country and negotiation between the dealer and growers, not just cotton growers, but all growers, whether it's rice in Southeast Asia or right here in our backyard. So I honestly don't know what what prices will be. And so I can lean on this, use this crutch that, while we're not legally able to answer your question, but I honestly don't know what, if I could, I don't know what I would say. I really don't. So, sorry.
One more.
Yeah, that basically the question is, what is happening with our domestic nitrogen production because of natural gas prices? And you summarized it well. Because of the cost of domestic gas here, we have basically exported our nitrogen manufacturing capability, a good deal of it. And we do have, I think the last number I saw was 29 or 30 nitrogen plants in North America that have shut down permanently just because it's not feasible for them to operate. And so we have more than 50% of our nitrogen that is now imported in this country, and that concerns me a bit. I mean, we can talk about food security, and very closely connected to that is fertilizer security, and being dependent upon, even though the company might be owned by somebody in North America, it's still not on our turf, and that is a concern. But your observations are right. I mean, we've got a lot lower end production capacity in North America than we had a few years ago. Yep. Thank you.
Okay.